Great to have you along on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here. Well, this Tuesday of every month, the first Tuesday of every month, is our sports show. And we always like to welcome in Megan Hart. And here she is. I can actually see her today. I'll see three of her. I don't know if I'm... I haven't had anything to drink. As I look at my screen, I see her a triplicate. And so she's got three times as much to talk about, I guess, as normal. And we'll be visiting about the latest developments in Wisconsin sports with her. Like to have you join in the conversation. What are your thoughts on Green Bay's loss to Tampa Bay? Oh, do you have any questions about the Bucs' recent struggles? Join in. Give us a call at 800-642-1234, or you can email us at ideas@wpr.org. Love to hear from you. Well, Megan, welcome. Good to have you back.
Hey, Larry. Thanks for having me.
Well, I'll tell you what. We may all be sick of even thinking about it anymore, but the Packers, that last Packers game, you wonder why this team has had so many problems with the Bucs this year.
Yeah, it's true. The Bucs really were the team that that kind of showed the Packers up during when they met in the regular season, and especially the Bucs defense. Kind of the Packers offense all season was so strong, scored more points than any other team in the league, won 13 games, and somehow the Bucs just had them figured out when they met back in October, and had another very good performance when they met in the NFC title game.
Yeah, although it felt a little bit like the Packers threw it away.
To be perfectly. It did. Yeah, you know, it was going into the game, I think the matchup between the quarterbacks, Tom Brady and Aaron Rodgers, two of the greatest of all time, really got top billing. But ultimately, the game did not come down to brilliant quarterback play. The Bucs had five sacks. Tom Brady threw three interceptions. It really came down more to which team capitalized on the opportunities that they got and made fewer mistakes. And ultimately that was definitely the Bucs. They had 14 points off of turnovers after all season. Holding onto the ball was really a hallmark of the Packers offense. And so you hate to see it in such a big game.
Well, that certainly, I think, led to the demise, especially that touchdown right at the end of the first half, led to the changing of the guard and some coaching changes. And maybe we can talk about that. And I just learned maybe an hour ago that Jim Leonard from the UW, the defensive coordinator for the UW, is going to be interviewed for that position. Whether or not he'll get it is another thing. But maybe talk a bit about the changes.
Yeah, so I think Tom Silverstein from the Milwaukee Journal-Sentinel had a story where he looked at that play right before halftime and found it was an error by Matt LaFleur, the head coach, that kind of led to that mix-up in coverage, calling for man instead of cover two, that led to that touchdown that really kind of gave the Bucs a lot of momentum and a big lead going into halftime. But ultimately, you know, it seems like the Packers chose not to renew Mike Pettine, the defensive coordinator's contract, going into next season. And LaFleur said this week he knows very specifically what he's looking for in a defensive coordinator. And so we'll see who that is, whether it is Leonard, who, of course, has been amazing at UW. I know they've got some other interviews lined up, but a lot of fans really have kind of thrown their hat in the ring for Wade Phillips, who got on Twitter and thanked them for that support. But you know, we'll have to wait and see what they go with.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. Well, Leonard certainly fits that mold of you know, a guy who is aggressive, and I think that's what LaFleur wants for sure in his next.
Yeah, I mean, LaFleur, of course, is so young and had so much success coming right into the league. But it does seem like he wants someone based on the interviews that he has lined up so far who isn't bringing a lot of baggage from past defensive coordinator roles in the NFL, and who will really fit well into that system he's running. So.
Well, it'll be interesting to see who. I'd hate to see Jim Leonard leave the Badgers, but
that's
if
true.
He's going to go anywhere, going to go anywhere, I'd love to see him. You know, I would hope it would be to the Packers. That would be great. And that frankly makes, if he does decide to take it, it'll be interesting for sure. Well, let's talk about, I want to talk about a press conference here. And I'm you mentioned a reporter. I'm going to mention Jason Wild from the Wisconsin State Journal. He had a great story about wondering whether or not our quarterback Aaron Rodgers was listening into the press conference with Gutekunst and LaFleur. You're familiar with that. They came out really strongly to put anything aside that Aaron Rodgers would be leaving anytime soon.
Oh yeah. That has really been, especially that Gutekunst press conference, that was really the focus. Kind of you wonder if Rodgers was listening, because it seems like he must have known that he would be, because so much of it was dedicated to talking about how he's the leader and the team can win with Rodgers. And of course there's been talk, I mean after the NFC title game loss, I don't know if you saw that press conference with Aaron Rodgers, but he was clearly quite dejected by the loss. He said he was gutted, and he mentioned, he said that the hardest part of this season ending is that his teammates that he's grown so close with, you know, they may not all be back next year. And then he said, and that includes me. And so that, of course, rang alarm bells, I'm sure, for management, the Packers management, and for fans. And so I can see why that has been such a popular topic of discussion among team leaders. And there was talk that the Rams, who had their own big trade this past week, or the 49ers were maybe calling about Rodgers to see if he was on the trading block. But I think really the team this week made it clear that that is not the case.
Not the case. And here, you know, he's probably going to win the MVP.
Yeah, so that's Saturday. I know it would be nice if Packers fans were tuning in Sunday to watch him win the Super Bowl, but they'll have to do it Saturday, tune in, watch him win MVP. I think he just is such a clear favorite. He had the best passer rating in the league, led the league in touchdowns, led the best offense in the league, was the top seed in the NFC. So his numbers were certainly on par with his past two MVP years. And so at least that's something this weekend that we can enjoy.
And the Super Bowl itself. Oh, hey, you're a Tampa Bay gal.
Yeah, I am from the Tampa Bay area. being from that area, I think I feel a little pride that the Bucks will become the first team ever to play the Super Bowl in their home stadium, which is pretty cool. There are a couple teams that have played in their home markets out in California, Los Angeles and San Francisco, but never in their home stadium. So that's pretty exciting. And I think, again, the big storyline going into the game is Tom Brady against Patrick Mahomes, another exciting quarterback matchup. Of course, Tom Brady is the winningest quarterback of all time. He's won 6 Super Bowls. This will be the 10th one he's playing in. And then Patrick Mahomes won the Super Bowl last year, won MVP 2 years ago. And he's, you wonder if eventually by the end of his career, maybe they'll be talked about in the same league, two of the greatest to ever play.
Yeah, that's for sure. Well, let's switch to another topic that is a little concerning as well, and that's the Bucs. They certainly are not the dominant team as they were last year, for sure.
Yeah, they. Good news is they played very well last night. I think addressed a lot of kind of the concerns coming off of that road trip where they lost back-to-back games to the Pelicans and the Hornets. But they're a very different team. The last 2 years, the Bucks won more regular season games than any other team in the league. And I think you get used to watching them win. And so it feels alarming when they have more of a middling start. But they didn't really make it. They didn't live up to expectations in the postseason those 2 years when they had such spectacular regular season. So maybe a little regular season adversity will serve them later in the year. But you know, those couple of games on the road trip were very rough. And so I think, you know, last night when they played, they beat the Trailblazers 134-106. But they addressed a lot of the challenges they had been facing, specifically bench production. I think they give up a lot of threes, which is a challenge in a league where there's a lot of good three-point shooters. But last night, the Bucks kind of countered that by shooting a lot of threes. They brought in Drew Holiday this year from New Orleans, who is a really strong defender. And I think as he gets more comfortable, you know, their defense will improve. And, you know, hopefully it's not as dire of a situation as we thought when they lose to the Pelicans and Lonzo Ball has 27 points.
Well, here's some controversy there, too, about the Bucks senior vice president, Alex Lazary, getting the COVID vaccine. I haven't gotten my shot yet either. mine's coming up sometime this month. It's scheduled. But him getting it, has that died down a little? Because people were kind of mad about that. Some people.
Yeah, people were kind of mad. It's interesting. Somebody during a news conference asked Governor Evers about it, and he said that that it's, you know, best not to let any of the shots go to waste, but that he hadn't been vaccinated yet either. But basically, the story is Lazary's 33. He's a senior vice president with the Bucks, and his wife's uncle called to say his wife's uncle is a rabbi and called to say that. They had extra doses at an assisted living facility or nursing home that were going to go to waste. And Lazary's wife is pregnant. So he decided, she did not get vaccinated. He decided to go get the vaccine so the doses wouldn't go to waste, and also to protect his family with his wife being a little more vulnerable right now. And he did talk about it on Twitter, said it was pure happenstance. But of course, there is some, you know, there has to be controversy around it because it, you know, the vaccine rollout has not gone incredibly smoothly. There are many people in the state who are in groups that are part of phase 1A that have yet to complete their vaccine regimen. But I think kind of an interesting bigger discussion is that, well, there's a couple bigger implications. One is that the NBA has struggled at times this season to play games amid the pandemic. The Bucks had a game postponed. The 76ers, who are having a great season, they played a game with seven players because of COVID issues. And so, you know, there has been talk of whether the NBA should deal with a bad PR and try to jump the line to get players vaccinated. Then there's also Lazary is possibly going to run for Senate. So the optics of his getting vaccinated before many people over 65 could also have implications there. So, I mean, it's just a, you know, of course, something we never would have thought that we would be talking about a year ago, but it is what it is. And I think, you know, a lot of people have different opinions about it.
Well, we have, there is some good news in sports these days. I think the bad Wisconsin Badgers, man, I watched the, women's volleyball team over the weekend. I saw the matches with Illinois, and there they are, ranked number one. And the women's hockey team, ranked number one.
Yeah,
great,
you know,
teams.
They are great teams. You know, they it's a shame because they both attract so many fans when they play at home in Madison. And they're so much fun to watch, but they're still getting it done without all those fans there. But yeah, the volleyball team is a top ranked team in the country. They played four matches so far, dropped just one set. They were able to finish last season. Volleyball is usually a fall sport. So they wrapped up last season right around the end of 2019. And they went to the finals. They lost to Stanford in the finals for the national championship. So and hearing from the players, you know, even though that now is a long time ago, and they've almost never gone so long without playing in competitions, they still kind of, many of them still kind of feel the sting of losing in the national championship. And that still kind of gives them some motivation. And they said being ranked number one, you know, it feels good, especially going into the season before they've actually been able to play. It doesn't mean quite as much, but that it is a little bit of an extra kind of push that they feel they have some expectations to live up to. And they've certainly done that so far. Of course, the women's hockey team is a perennial favorite. They are technically the reigning national champions because they did not have a postseason. That was supposed to take place last spring, and it was canceled during the pandemic. So they're coming back with high expectations as well. And, you know, they've managed to have a lot of success, even though they basically missed the whole month of December after injuries and coronavirus issues kind of took them out of commission. But they've it's a good weekend to watch the hockey team because they are taking on number 2 Minnesota Friday and Saturday. So that will have a lot of implications for the upcoming postseason to have the number 1 and 2 teams in the country facing off. So those should be some good games.
I imagine the Big Ten Network will be carrying those games. I'm not positive, but I would assume because those are at least one of the games, I hope.
I haven't checked yet. I know that the volleyball team is playing this weekend, and those games are on Big Ten Plus. The volleyball team, they kind of get their season going later this month. They play Nebraska, and that's kind of the first time this season they will take on some really top competition. We get to see them against a top 5 team.
And I got to mention the Badger men's cross country team. Here we had their two probably best runners or two of the best runners for the Big Ten Championship out because of COVID, and yet they win the Big Ten Championship.
Yeah, that was big news last weekend. I think bodes well going into the NCAA Championship, and it's exciting news. I mean, there's a lot going on this semester. Cross country and volleyball are both sports that would traditionally take place earlier in the year. And so you've got a lot of winning teams playing at once for the Badgers.
And I think we have 5 nationally ranked teams, if I'm not mistaken, the Badgers do.
Yep. There's, I know there's men's wrestling, there's men's basketball. Of course, the women's hockey and volleyball are number 1. So it's a very busy semester in terms of the athletic department.
And the cross country team, there they are. They win the Big Ten Championship. So lots of good things going on there. Well, I want to talk about more of the athletics, UW athletic department. I also want to talk about sturgeon spearing, and I tell you what, John in Richmond Center wants to know if muskie fishing is a sport. I can address that as well. I don't know if you've done any of that yet. Probably not if you're from Florida. But
I have not, but I do find I love covering stories about hunting and fishing because they have such a rich culture here in Wisconsin.
Well, we'll talk some more about hunting and fishing maybe, and we'll talk more. We got the Brewers coming up. We got sturgeon spearing. We've got more of the athletic board meeting at the UW. So lots to talk about with Megan Hart. You can join in. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Or you can email us at ideas@wpr.org, and Megan will be with us up till 12:30 today. We'll take a quick look at the news, find out what else is in store for us here on the Ideas Network, and then we'll be back with Megan. I'm Larry Mueller for the Ideas Network. Taking a look at sports going on, and some of it's over too, unfortunately. The Packers year is kind of done, but we're talking sports now, a broad range of them, with our guest WPR sports reporter Megan Hart back with us again today. It's always fun to talk with her, and we'd like to hear from you as well. What do you think about the Badgers doing more with less? What do you think about the Badger basketball team? An enigma for sure. Should we be playing at all? That's another question we can even take up. Give a call. Number's 800-642-1234. Or you can email us at ideas@wpr.org, and we will take up the controversy of whether or not muskie fishing is a sport when we talk with Megan as well. I tend to think that it is a sport, and so I'll be weighing in on that for sure. Anyway, let's go back to the Badgers for a little bit, because the athletic board, I should mention, I served on the athletic board two terms, I think 8 years on the board. So I know kind of what goes on at those board meetings. And they just had a meeting, and you've got some info on what they came up with. God, they lost money. I'm glad I'm not on the board now, because they lost a pile of money.
It does seem like a very challenging time, because, you know, you're not only dealing with the revenue loss from not being able to have fans or play full seasons, but for earlier, you know, before football season, there was the question of whether there would be sports at all. You know, you brought up the fact that that's still something we could be talking about, is whether we should be playing. But they certainly have had to deal with a lot. And like you said, figure out how to do more with less. They're projecting that their revenue shortfall this year through this fiscal year, so through the end of June, will be between $40 and $50 million. So they're actually going to miss out on more than $70 million in revenue, but they've been able to cut down on expenses through furloughs, not filling positions, and other moves. So they've been able to sort of bring down that ultimate loss, but it's still, of course, significant. And they've been able to do it while also paying for things that they've never had to do before, like daily COVID testing and things like that. So it's a challenge, but there are 22 of the 23 Badger teams playing this semester, every team except the football team. So, you know, they've certainly are very busy figuring out how to keep the athletes safe, keep those teams going, and pay for it all.
Yeah, paying for it all. This can't go on. This is the kind of got to cease at some point pretty soon for a lot of, not only for the UW, but for every other university that's involved in sports, for sure. There's no doubt about that. Well, what's going on with what's going on with the men's basketball team? That's probably one question. I don't know if you have anything on that, but they're like two different teams sometimes. They play a great half, and then they look like they didn't know what they were doing out there when it comes to defense, and that's our hallmark.
Yeah, it's that game against the last two games against Penn State. They didn't hold on, but they did manage to hold on against Maryland. That's certainly been sort of their style, really struggling in the second half. They get a rematch against Penn State this week, so hopefully they can get it back on track. But yeah, an enigma, I think, is what you called them before the break. And that's a good way to look at it. I mean, they are well positioned to probably right now a 3 or 4 seed in the NCAA tournament. The Big Ten tournament, during the athletic board meeting, actually, we found out that that's being moved to Indianapolis. So we're coming up on that. So hopefully they'll be able to get some more consistency before we get to the postseason.
Well, sturgeon spearing season begins February 13th, I think. But there's some COVID changes even with sturgeon spearing.
Yeah. Yeah, so that's set to begin the 13th. You know, I do think that that fishing constitutes a sport, and especially sturgeon spearing, because I just think it's amazing anyone can do that. It seems really challenging, but I know they've sold 12,000 licenses so far, and that's on par with past years despite coronavirus. But they did have to make some changes, specifically the way that they register fish. So with sturgeon spearing, there are caps based on how many male fish, adult females, and juvenile females can be caught. So actually the DNR has to look at every fish after it's caught, and fishers, spears are supposed to have their fish registered by 2 p.m. the day that they catch it. And normally they have these registration stations at local businesses around Lake Winnebago and the Upper Lakes. But this year they've actually opted for a drive-through model. So they've moved to sort of less busy parking lots, at parks or municipal buildings, and they ask you to put your fish in the trunk or somewhere accessible so you can pull up and stay in the car, and a DNR biologist can pull the fish out, get the information they need, and put the fish back in with a tag showing it's been registered. So it's definitely, I mean, of course, coronavirus has changed everything this year in one way or another. So that'll be different. But the DNR did say that they have plans to go back to local businesses because it is, it is very good for local businesses to have those, the business that comes with the registration stations. And so hopefully next year that will be back to normal.
Well, you know, we've got a sturgeon comment from Bob in Crivets. So let's go there. Bob, hi. Thanks for calling.
Hello, you there?
Yeah, we're there. We're here.
Okay, thank you. Yeah, it's Bob. Okay, I don't know if I go muskie fishing. I know sturgeon fish. Okay, but I've been up at Woodruff in Minocqua. Okay, and I was in a restaurant one morning and having breakfast in, I don't remember the name of the restaurant, but okay. And two kids from Lac de Flambeau Village caught it's mounted. It's 7'1", 196 pounds sturgeon. Okay, and they had it in the community center, so I drove over there in the morning. It's about 15 miles from Woodruff. Okay, and I talked with one of the janitors there. He let me in and take some pictures of it. Okay, and since that time, I took my wife and my kids up there. Okay, to see it. Okay, it's mounted. If you drive on the main street into Lac de Flambeau, it's in the library on your left-hand side. It's really something to see. 7'1". It's 196 pounds. Two kids caught it in a 12-foot rowboat, okay, and they beached it.
Wow.
That's a great story, Bob. Well, 196 pounds, that's something for sure.
Yeah, that's – I mean, sturgeon are such I wasn't very familiar with sturgeon until when I first moved to Wisconsin, I moved to Sheboygan. So still in this sturgeon-spearing region and – they are some crazy looking fish and sturgeon fishing. It just seems like it has to be a sport if you are pulling up something that heavy. I can't even imagine. That's amazing.
Well, I've got one sturgeon story that a female caller, this is years back. And I think I've told it once, but I'll retell it. When you're sturgeon fishing, you're in a little hut or building and the spear hangs over the hole, which is kind of a good size hole, and there's always a decoy that's the legal length of a sturgeon. So when if one comes swimming through, you know right away whether or not it's legal. And this guy was fishing with his black Labrador was with him. He had it in the shack, and the lab was looking down in the water and suddenly jumped in the water and went under the ice. And he's wondering what the heck is happening here. And then it wasn't too long and he hears this shout and this crash. And he gets out of his shack and looks, and here's one that's tipped over. Right next near him, and there's his dog, and the guy in the other shack was looking down the hole waiting for his sturgeon, and here comes a black lab boiling out of the water. So that was probably the best sturgeon story that I think I ever heard. I love that story. So you haven't been out on the ice yet to watch that, I guess.
Maybe. No, I have not. I'm hoping to this year. It would be crazy to see something like that. I hope to get out there. I know that we've got some cold weather coming up, so hopefully conditions will be good for when people get started, and it'll be a successful season.
It'll be fun. Well, John in Rhinelander has a muskie story, a muskie fishing story. So let's go there. Hey, John.
Hi, after I got back from Canada fishing for walleyes, I was fishing on Boom Lake, Wisconsin. That's up by Rhinelander where they have this paper mill dam. Well, the spillage is where it makes real fast moving water, but also the backwaters that the big muskies sit in the weeds waiting for. Well, the biggest muskie I saw was right there.
Right.
I had it, and she caught it on a 4-pound test line.
Uh-oh.
First, I caught this red horse, the red horse was like a 5 pound, like a bullhead, but it's a sucker fish, like a carp. So I caught the carp, pulled it in, and then worked it towards the shore where we were sitting on the nice picnic benches they've got. And all of a sudden, sneaking around, I could see this leopard-skinned fish. Real shiny, real big, like a small dog. Like a teenage German shepherd, about that size. Grabbed the red horse and hung on and would not let go of that red horse. So I had two fish on 1 4-pound test line. It's a true story.
That's a good story, John. Thanks a lot. I had a time where I was actually fishing muskies. I got tired of it because I wasn't getting any bites and any action. So I was back at the campsite and fishing for some bluegills just to get something to eat for lunch. And a muskie grabbed onto the bluegill as I was pulling it in. And I finally, it let go. But when I pulled it out, it looked like the cartoon pictures you see of a fish, because it was just the skeleton of the bluegill was all that was left of that particular bluegill, for sure. And back to the comment from somebody about whether or not that's muskie fishing is sport. I would say it's a sport because you're standing, you're casting often a heavy lure, cast after cast after cast, and you're maybe on your feet anywhere from 8 to 12 hours in a rocking boat. And believe me, it takes a little bit out of you. So I'm with it that it's a sport. And looks like you're agreeing with me. You're nodding your head. Yes.
Oh, yeah, I agree with you. I mean, I think obviously there's a physical aspect to it. There's plenty of competitions. Anything where you can enter a competition maybe is a sport.
Well, I've caught a lot of them, and I've had a lot of fun doing it. Well, let's switch from the muskies and sturgeon to the Brewers for a bit, because we haven't talked about the Brewers at all. They hired their first female development hitting coordinator, which I thought was really cool. Talk about that.
Yeah, that's exciting. I think it's really exciting news. So she will, her name is Sarah Goodrum. She was a softball player at Oregon, where she studied physiology. She got a master's degree in exercise and sports science and joined the Brewers initially in their sports science department. So she's been with the team 3 years, but in her new role, she will be sort of overseeing all the team's minor league prospects as they work on their hitting. So she'll be based in Phoenix, where the Brewers have spring training. But I mean, it's a really big, exciting job, and she's the first woman ever to have that role of sort of developmental hitting coordinator, and to have all of the responsibilities of you know, helping get players ready to eventually hopefully reach the big leagues and play with the Brewers. And it's, you know, I think part of a recent trend to have that we're seeing more women in coaching. So another recent hire was Bianca Smith with the Red Sox. She's the first Black woman to coach for a major league team. She's a minor league coach with the Red Sox, but she was the hitting coordinator for Carroll University down in the Milwaukee area. So she's got some Wisconsin ties as well. But really, you know, I think since 2019 has become more common. The first woman to be hired as a professional baseball coach with a professional team was Rachel Balkovics, who was hired by the Yankees as a minor league hitting coach. And I remember reading that when she was, you know, of course she's very qualified in her experience, but when she was applying for jobs, she was having trouble. And on her resume, she changed her name from Rachel to Ray. And then she started getting calls. But it seems like since she's been hired, the Cubs also hired a minor league hitting coach who is a woman. The San Francisco Giants hired a female hitting coach on their professional staff. So, you know, times have kind of changed. And then, of course, Kim Ng was hired by the Miami Marlins as the first female general manager in professional baseball. So I think it's exciting because now young women who play softball or who love baseball can really kind of see a future for themselves on the baseball operation side.
Yeah, it was really great, as especially a general manager. I mean, that's right at the top. I mean,
yeah.
You know, that is the top position. So that was just great to see. Well, you know, more on the Brewers. The signs are changed at Miller Park. I guess they're... I haven't seen them yet, but except a photo of them. But tell me about those signs.
Yeah, I know when we initially kind of published a story, which the one of our very clever web team producers changed the headline that I wrote to "The Signs They Are Changing," which I thought was very smart. But when we published that story, we got a lot of comments and a lot of feedback about people who will continue to call it Miller Park and who are not happy about the change. But, you know, it is a business. And so the American Family Field signs are going up. And I like the logo. It's Brewers color. I think it looks nice. I think people will feel maybe a little consolation to know that Miller actually will preserve some of their signs at the Miller Valley campus. So they're not, you know, going to the dump. I think JJ Watt on Twitter said that he wanted to know if he could buy one. they're not for sale, but some will be preserved. And the team is continuing to kind of change the different logos around the field. But yeah, it should happen in time for next baseball season. But I'm sure a lot of people will continue to call it Miller Park.
But eventually, you know, I think it's going to be AmFam Park.
That is still catchy.
I like AmFam Park. I think it's a American Family Park.
Yeah.
Not so much, but it's easy to say AmFam Park. And so I think that's where it's going to land. And I don't know why people get too upset about Miller. The name. It's not like Lambeau Field and changing, you know, where you've a lot of history connected with it, or Camp Randall Stadium, which are not, fortunately, for some people, not sold. The naming rights haven't been sold. So
I think you know, this kind of segues into something else that we might talk about. But back in 2019, I think the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel actually made a push to have the stadium permanently renamed Hank Aaron Park or something along those lines. And so that, you know, would have kind of cemented it alongside Lambeau Field. But of course, that didn't work out. But I think people will get used to AmFam. It's still a catchy name.
And, you know, Hank Aaron, you know, we've got some people who have passed away. Hank Aaron, one of them, one of the greatest maybe baseball player ever to play for the Braves. And I guess did he play for the Brewers right at the end of his career? Yeah, right at the end of his career. A wonderful, wonderful man. And then Ted Thompson, to go back to the Packers for a minute, we lost Ted Thompson, who was certainly a great in his field, great manager, general manager.
Yeah. I mean, it's two very big losses for the Wisconsin sports community. Of course, Hank Aaron. I mean, it's hard, you know, it's kind of hard to overstate the significance of his career, breaking Babe Ruth's home run record. He still leads the league in total bases and RBIs. And of course he broke so many barriers. I know that it was challenging for him to break Babe Ruth's record, not only from the athletic side of things, but also because a lot of people were very unhappy about a black athlete kind of surpassing who they consider to be the greatest baseball player of all time. And so, you know,
death threats and everything.
Yeah. I know Dusty Baker, who played with the Braves, said that I think he told NPR that it should have been a really happy time for Hank Aaron when he hit his 715th home run, but it wasn't. He, you know, more just wanted to get it over with because he knew that people wouldn't be happy about it. But I think, you know, fortunately now we can look back on his career and should be really thankful for it and appreciate it as it deserves. And he even played minor league baseball in Eau Claire, actually. So he had a rich history in Wisconsin. And then, of course, you know, with the Packers,
here we are.
Yeah, drafted Aaron Rodgers.
And here we are out of time.
Aaron Rodgers with his first move. I think that's all you need to know about his contributions.
Megan, thanks so much.
Encapsulates it all. Thank you.
Megan Hart, sports reporter for Wisconsin Public Radio. I hope we'll get her back and we will do this again with her. It's always fun to talk with her. Well, tomorrow Scott Craven's back to talk about, the upcoming turkey season, feeding birds, and to talk about cooking wild game. He and I have taught some wild game cooking classes together, as a matter of fact. Thanks for listening. Stay with us. Lots in store on the Ideas Network. I'm Larry Mueller.